Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode, a conversation with Dean Susan Fournier, where she answers the question at the heart of the show.
From NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Jane Clayson, and this is On Point. In the midst of the economic pain caused by the coronavirus pandemic, there is growing concern that a mental health epidemic is giving rise to an increase in substance abuse and addiction across this country. Resources for addiction recovery have been depleted in towns, communities, and populations that need them the most. And physical distancing has constrained opportunities for the type of in-person care that's always been an integral part of effective treatment. This hour, On Point, treating substance abuse during the pandemic. With me first from New York City, Dr. Lippi Roy. She is a clinical assistant professor at the NYU School of Medicine with a specialty in addiction treatment. She's also a medical contributor for MSNBC. Dr. Roy, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Hi, Jane. I'm so honored to talk to you about this really critical health topic.
It sure is important. Let's start with the fact that addiction was a huge concern before the pandemic. How has COVID-19 created the perfect storm with regard to substance abuse in this country?
You're absolutely right. Before the pandemic, we knew that 23 million Americans with substance use disorder, only 10% access treatment. And according to the World Health Organization, drug addiction is the most stigmatized social problem, not even a health problem, but social problem, meaning that drug addiction is more stigmatized than poverty, homelessness, incarceration. So we have a real uphill battle when it comes to getting access to treatment for people with various substance use disorders. Mm.
So a lot of factors are putting people at risk right now, from massive unemployment to these stay-at-home orders that have been keeping us safe. And a lot of people are teetering on the brink of not only economic, but psychological instability. How does that contribute to addiction and substance abuse issues?
Yeah, I'm so glad you phrased it like that. So to follow up on your earlier expression of this, a perfect storm, COVID-19, this pandemic has created an environment where everybody is under even more stress than normal. And you mentioned environmental stressors such as unemployment, food insecurity, domestic violence. All of these issues were certainly stressors before, but now this pandemic has just amplified all of these issues. And we already know that stress, environmental stressors, traumatizing experiences are already risk factors for drug use and addiction. So we as a society really need to work harder to make sure that these vulnerable men and women get the care that they need and deserve.
Right, because between the stigma that you mentioned, the stigma of addiction, and mental illness for that matter, and the fact that, you know, you maybe can't pay the rent right now, you've lost your job, you can't buy food, you're struggling in so many areas. It's like a balancing act, balancing, you called it balancing a crystal vase on a high wire. It's such an important moment to have this conversation about addiction and what it means and what it's doing to people.
Well, you're absolutely right, Jane. And, you know, in the medical profession, like I'm very blunt when I give talks and lectures. I was not trained in this during medical school or during my medical training. Everything I'm talking to you about now has been from on-the-job training. So I am hopeful, however, that medical schools and students and residents are learning more about addiction today than they were, say, 5-10 years ago. But this is, you know, I guess one of the positives of the opioid crisis is that it's shining a broader light on addiction more generally. And if I may just take this moment to explain to the listeners that addiction is a chronic medical disease of the brain, a relapsing and remitting disease that causes compulsive drug seeking and use to and harm to the person using, despite harmful consequences to the person using and those around him or her. It is not a sign of moral weakness or failure.
Right. Which goes to the stigma that we were speaking of. Addiction is disproportionately impacting specific populations right now. People of color, Native Americans, the homeless, women, adolescents. Explain the demographics of this, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, I'm glad you phrased it like that. You're absolutely right. You know, the director of NIDA, the National Institute of Drug Abuse, Dr. Nora Volkow, she has been very open about stating that certain populations, as you pointed out, are more vulnerable. In fact, she said on her regular blog called Nora's Blog, she states that individuals with substance use disorder are more likely to experience homelessness or incarceration than those in the general population. And these circumstances pose unique challenges regarding COVID-19 transmission. We know already that this particular virus, it transmits. It's an infectious and a highly infectious pathogen that's more likely to transmit person to person when people congregate. Places like homeless shelters, correctional facilities, jails, prisons. It's very difficult, if not impossible, to stay isolated. And therefore, you're at higher risk for getting the virus, and you're already at increased risk for developing a drug addiction as well.
Beyond those places, speak to this idea that social isolation is taking a real toll on our vulnerable population. A common motto in the field of addiction is that the opposite of addiction is not sobriety, it's connection. So in this time of isolation, speak to that critical piece, Dr. Roy.
Yeah. When I learned that motto, that common phrase that's used in the addiction field about it's really not sobriety, it's connection, my mind just shifted. And once I started working with patients with various stages of substance use, I really got it. Those in-person connections, building trust, which is a huge step to decreasing stigma. That's all getting disrupted now with the pandemic. We in the public health community are actually telling people, no, stay home. Don't meet up with people. It's one thing to not do so socially, but when it comes to clinical and health matters, where people with SUD addiction relied on meeting their counselors, their doctors, their nurses, their care teams, definitely now this is COVID-19 and isolation is posing unique challenges, and we really need to work even harder to come up with creative solutions to make sure we're not neglecting, again, our vulnerable men and women who really rely on medications and counseling to get better.
Let me bring another voice into the conversation now from Minneapolis, Minnesota, Dr. Joseph Lee. He is the medical director for youth services at Hazelden Betty Ford, one of the nation's leading addiction treatment organizations. Dr. Lee, welcome to On Point. Nice to have you.
Thank you. Thanks for having us on.
You work at a clinic in Minnesota, one of the largest recovery centers in the country. Give us a sense of what you're seeing right now on the front lines of addiction recovery.
Well, we see a lot. I work with young people and young adults from across the country, and we have a full continuum across the country. We have a number of sites. We're the largest nonprofit treatment organization in the country, and we're seeing a lot. We see a lot of demand. We see surging alcohol and other drug use, and we see people paralyzed by fear. A lot of family members that I work with, on the one hand, at home through social distancing, they're seeing the horrors and all the glory of their loved one's addiction, people rummaging through their entire alcohol supply within a few days, loved ones going through withdrawal, leaving the house and exposing other people to risk. And they want to get help. But on the other hand, they're paralyzed by not wanting to leave the home and possibly getting exposed to COVID-19. And so we're trying to communicate a message that there is an on-ramp to get help. There are various ways to get help. And there's hope and resiliency, even in a dark time like this.
Mm. Are you seeing patients, Dr. Lee, who are relapsing? Are you seeing more folks struggling for the first time?
We see all kinds, and it's incredible how COVID-19 has affected so many different people in different ways. People who are pretty strong in their recovery actually have been incredibly resilient because, as you and Dr. Roy have pointed out, addiction is a disease that exists in isolation and loneliness. And our mission is all about love and connection and healing through that. And so there are people who've been able to patch together communities and support, who are strong in recovery, who understand suffering and loneliness, and those people are very admirable in this time. But there are a lot of people who are new to recovery, and they have to access virtual services, or it's hard to get help. There are also people who are maybe on the warning zone for developing a substance use disorder, and they've relied on their jobs or an exercise routine or their social cliques to kind of stave off a serious addiction. And those supports are now falling apart. And so we see people who are returning to use. We see people who have developed new use and are recognizing it for the first time. We see people who have hidden their addiction for a long time due to shame and stigma, and their family members are seeing it for the first time. And so we're seeing all comers.
And COVID has made it harder for many to access services like yours because so many have been laid off from their jobs, right? They've lost their health insurance. How do you see this manifesting itself, Dr. Lee?
Well, it manifests in so many ways. And I think the two of you said it well, you know, and one thing I say a lot is that economic prosperity may not trickle down, but suffering certainly does. And it does affect certain populations disproportionately. For example, people who need medications for opioid use disorder are having a harder time getting it. People who need psychiatric services are having a harder time finding those services. We've launched, actually, last year, we started to work on a virtual program, and we've moved thousands of our patients to a virtual on-ramp to do intensive outpatient care, group, individual, family treatment. But, you know, we're a larger nonprofit. There are a lot of nonprofits who are struggling with the infrastructure and the platform. The stigma leads to a lack of resources, both in terms of access and insurance for people who want to get help, but also just the infrastructure is not well supported. So people aren't finding a lot of venues to get the help. So these times are making it hard for a lot of people in the community, and the demand is huge.
The demand is huge, and a lot of people are struggling. Dr. Joseph Lee in Minneapolis, the medical director for youth services at Hazelden Betty Ford, one of the nation's leading treatment centers for substance abuse and addiction. Our other guest, Dr. Lippi Roy, clinical assistant professor at NYU School of Medicine, specializing in addiction treatment. Dr. Roy, Dr. Lee, stick with me. Listeners, we're discussing substance abuse and addiction during the pandemic. Much more to come. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken?, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. These days, it's hard to ignore the debate over the role business should play in society.
There's crescendo around profit, period. Is profit bad? Is capitalism evil? These themes are out there.
Is this criticism of business warranted? And if so, how do we fix it? Stick around until the end of this podcast for a preview of the first episode of the Is Business Broken podcast. Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. We're discussing the impact of the coronavirus pandemic on addiction and how to find help during this period of physical and social distancing. With me this hour, Dr. Lippi Roy, clinical associate professor at NYU, the NYU School of Medicine with a specialty in addiction treatment. Also, Dr. Joseph Lee, medical director for youth services at Hazelden Betty Ford, one of the nation's leading addiction treatment organizations. Let me play this clip from one of our On Point listeners, Lisa, who identifies as an alcoholic, as an addict, has 11 years sobriety. She left us a message about her experience staying sober during the pandemic.
Being cut off from other people has been really difficult. I don't feel the need to use today, and I have a great network of people through Zoom, but that is not the case for many people right now. And one thing that is very difficult for me, and I'm sure many of the rest of us, is the constant joking of, we're home now, let's get drunk in the middle of the day. on Twitter and on commercials, and it sort of like was the pandemic joke when everyone was first isolating that it's happy hour all the time at home. Raise your glass on Zoom.
Dr. Roy, lots of jokes, lots of Twitter jokes, social media jokes right now about, you know, quarantinis and Zoom happy hours, drinking before noon. But it's not a joke for a lot of people who are struggling with their sobriety, who are addicts. Speak to that piece, that cultural piece of this, Dr. Roy.
Yeah, and you're absolutely right, Jane. This is not a joke at all. This is actually a chronic illness. And as this caller pointed out, the struggle is daily. It's sometimes it's hourly. And to Dr. Lee's point, we really do see a spectrum. People are on all stages of this illness. But I do congratulate this caller on her recovery. But yeah, there are a lot of people again in society who just don't take this seriously. But let me also just point out that the vast majority of people who use drugs, who drink alcohol, do so recreationally and don't go on to develop addiction. But for those who do, it's a struggle and we do need to take it seriously. I'm glad that Dr. Lee brought up alcohol because what we've actually seen is that alcohol sales and consumption have substantially increased in most areas of the country during the pandemic. And I anticipate that we're going to find increased alcohol associated with fatal opioid overdoses, as well as an increase in detox admissions, DWIs, and other alcohol-related complications. So we need to really be aware and address these issues.
Dr. Lee, that's a really important point. Alcohol sales spiked dramatically during the pandemic in this country. Is it possible for people who are drinking heavily and consistently during this pandemic to develop a problem they didn't have before?
Yes, there are many people in society who are at risk that may actually not develop any disease. And that goes for hypertension and diabetes, that genetically or otherwise, they might be at risk for whatever reason or just simple luck. They don't develop the symptoms that are concerning. So there are a lot of at-risk warning zone people who have increased their drinking or other drug use, and that could be a problem. And we know through history that in economic downturns and difficult times in our country, use does tick up constantly. And we know that external triggers like stresses and difficult societal times often cause a return to use or exponentially higher use. And so we do expect that as this COVID-19 courses down a little bit, we're going to see an uptick in demand. But there may be a lot of lives lost and a lot of lives destroyed along the way. I just want to also add for the caller, just that I just admire so many people who are in recovery right now, because if you heard her, she also has a mind for filling other people's cup. And so even though she's talking about her distress, she's able to empathize with how other people might be struggling with their plight and not getting that resilient help.
That's really an important point. Lisa, thank you very much for your call. And Dr. Lee, you talked about, and Lisa mentioned this, you know, the being cut off from people, the isolation, the loneliness. It's one of the key risk factors and triggers for substance abuse. What do you tell people about that? What do you tell your patients? Dr. Lee, you first.
Yeah, you know, what people should understand is that as addiction develops, there's a lot of shame about the use. And so people start to hide things and their secrets. And so even if they're socializing with people, they have a secret life, and that double life and then who they are, there's a gap between that really grows and stretches and then finally breaks. And that's when usually people get help. And I think in our COVID-19 pandemic, a lot of people are experiencing the same thing. They're experiencing similar levels of loneliness. A lot of people are in their homes. And I hope that at the end of this, we don't take for granted how important connection and how important we are to each other, because I think we have taken that for granted. And it's reflected in our social discourse and all the issues that we talk about. But these things are so vital. A lot of people are trapped in their houses with anxiety and fear. They may be reading the New York Times way too much and wondering, am I the only person like this? Mm-hmm. And there are a lot of people who see family members using or they're using themselves, and they have no reference point. There's no ability to connect and say, yeah, me too. And so it's so important for people like Lisa to share their story, to show that there's hope.
I keep hearing the words shame, stigma in this conversation. It's such an important point to stop attaching these moral judgments to those who suffer with addiction and often an underlying mental health condition. Dr. Roy, substance abuse is so often a symptom. It's not the underlying problem.
You're absolutely right, Jane. You know, one of the many lessons I've learned from my learning more about addiction and really from my patients who've just always been my best teachers is that it's all these underlying stressors and events, traumatizing events, stressful, difficult circumstances that really they're the roots of developing addiction. You know, substances such as alcohol, heroin, cocaine, even behaviors like devices, gambling, they're not the true cause of addiction. It's the events, a traumatizing event like, say, a pandemic, unemployment, divorce, hurricanes, abuse, physical, sexual, verbal. These environments, triggers, they can lead to, people self-medicating their pain and suffering. And that's why they sometimes resort to things that like alcohol and other substances. So, but stigma really is a barrier to care, Jane, and we need to really address that. And one way that all of us can do so is just by changing our vocabulary. Studies by people in Boston, such as Rich Sates, at Boston Medical and John Kelly and Sarah Wakeman at Mass General have shown that when we just change our vocabulary and instead of saying drug abuse or substance abuser, say a person with a substance use disorder, or instead of saying your urine is dirty, saying your urine is positive. Studies show that when we use less judgmental, more compassionate language, people are more likely to get care, and it improves the therapeutic relationship between clinicians and patients.
That's so interesting. Well, this conversation has touched a nerve. We have callers round the block here. Let's get first to Janesville, Wisconsin. Laura's on the line. Hi, Laura. Welcome to the program.
Hi. How are y'all today? Basically, I wanted to touch base on the opioid use trouble that this country is experiencing. I was on methadone for many years in Baltimore, Maryland. I was able to get onto a drug called Suboxone, which has been very helpful mm-hmm. for me. Mm-hmm. I'm very upset that this country is unable to provide this drug essentially free of charge to people. It's been out of study now long enough. I mean, and I just, it concerns me greatly that that people that are running into financial issues in this pandemic are now not able to get this drug because it is a very expensive drug still.
It's expensive and it's hard to get, Laura. Thank you so much for that call and stay well. Dr. Lee, speak to that point. These drugs that are so helpful to those who are struggling, not only do they cost a lot, but you can't get them, especially now.
That's right. It's a downstream problem also rooted in stigma. Stigma isn't just about personal shame or judgment from other people or your friends. Stigma has to do with resources and infrastructure. If you walk into a beautiful hospital and you want to get care for mental health or addiction issues for your loved one, and you walk into this beautiful hospital in a beautiful building and you ask for mental health or addiction services, you're going to get sent to the back annex. And that's what most people in America experience is that.
Or the basement, suffer, right?
That's right. Yeah. Or that what they suffer with is a second-class disease for second-class citizens.
Right.
And when you have that kind of infrastructure, as we're all vigilant about COVID and we're planning around what to do for this emergency and that, people with addiction and mental health issues fall through the cracks. And so the caller is absolutely correct. We have to do more to make it easier for people to access these medications and other routes for recovery.
Dr. Roy?
So I'm so glad that Laura brought up this important point. I will state that I'm hopeful that now, because of the pandemic, federal agencies have actually loosened some restrictions, which were always just archaic to begin with. So SAMHSA, the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, now allows patients to take home treatment courses of methadone for 2 weeks or longer, and rather than making them go every single day, to Dr. Lee's point, the fact that we have methadone treatment programs where people have to go, we don't make people go every day to pick up their insulin for their diabetes.
Right.
So why are we doing this for opioid use disorder? And the DEA has also allowed for federal rules have loosened in that they do not require an in-person consultation medication to initiate buprenorphine or Suboxone. So that's, again, movement in the right direction.
Let me bring another voice in here from New York City, MJ Gottlieb. He's co-founder of Lucid, an app created to help anyone in need of resources and community to navigate addiction and substance abuse. MJ Gottlieb, welcome to On Point.
Thanks so much for having me.
So 8 years sober, congratulations first.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
To your mind, has the coronavirus created new challenges to addicts, new challenges to staying sober?
100%. You know, when we enter early recovery, the one thing that we say not to do is to ever so self-isolate. And here we are. So, you know, there's a saying, those amongst us, no explanation is necessary. Those not amongst us, no explanation is possible. The challenges within the addiction community right now with self-isolation is just astronomical right now.
And so to that point, you have created an app, which is especially useful now, the app called Lucid, L-O-O-S-I-D. Tell us what you were trying to accomplish and how it's being helpful right now.
Well, you know, you hit it right on the head when you said kind of the opposite of addiction is connection. It's all about connection and engagement and knowing that you're not alone. So what we've seen since COVID is a dramatic increase in specific sections of the app that cater to our hotlines and groups. I think it was a 1,970% increase in the first 3 weeks, because people suddenly weren't able to have that connection, so they had to move virtual. Now, you could go to 12-step groups, which I'm a huge advocate for, but you can only go to so many per day. So we have over 1,000 groups within Lucid, whether it's sobriety in anxiety and depression or daily gratitude or hotlines, I'm having a bad day, I just relapse, I need advice. And so meaningful conversations can happen, and it's just so important to have that connection and engagement and to show people that they are not alone.
So 1,000 different groups on Lucid, MJ Gottlieb, and as I understand it, hospitality workers especially came to your app in large numbers after restaurants closed by the hundreds, by the thousands, and people lost their jobs. So there was a direct correlation. You can see it, MJ.
Right away. So very sadly, the hospitality being hit first, we saw people coming into the hotlines, unfortunately looking to overdose and kind of put themselves out of their pain. And so you had this about 63,000 people on the app coming in when someone would share, hey, you know, I don't know what to do. I can't take it. And then people would jump in and say, hey, I understand, I lost my job too, here's what I'm doing. And so it's all about, you know, surrounding yourself with a community who gets it and has that identification. Because also, in the hospitality industry, you know, the addiction rate is so high that they were going into a lot of the treatment centers, and the treatment centers didn't know whether or not people were coming in because they were dope sick or they had corona, so there was a bit of a bottleneck there. Mm-hmm. So it's been a very, very big challenge.
So are these technology tools as effective, MJ? Are they as effective treatment options for staying sober, for recovery treatment as in person, as sitting in a meeting, as being in a treatment center?
They are. Let me tell you why. I think they're complementary, but in my 8-plus years of sobriety, what I have found is when you relapse, when you feel like using, 9 times out of 10, the ego gets in your way and you don't want to call your sponsor. You don't want to call your friends. You don't want to call your network because you're ashamed. We talked about shame, right? And we need to kill that stigma. And so what you're able to do is you're able to tap into a group of, you know, tens of thousands of people who don't know you, but they understand exactly what you're going through. And you're saying, hey, I just relapsed. And there's no judgment because you're not being afraid that your friend or your family member or your sponsor or a member of your group in a 12-step fellowship is going to judge you. So, yeah, unfortunately, that is the case.
MJ, last question. What do you want people listening to know about the struggles of addiction, especially during this time of pandemic?
Listen, we may be physically distant right now, but you are not alone. The level of connection is there. You just need to reach out and find it. Use virtual communities. We have virtual events that you can attend in the app. There's incredible things that people are doing. We bring anything and everything that we can for people that are doing things in the sobriety and wellness space into our app to give things, you know, people things to do, and to connect and engage. And one other thing is service keeps you sober. So one great thing is go call your friend who may be struggling, call your aunt, your grandmother, your mother, someone that may be vulnerable to COVID, and reach out. And, you know, so service keeps you sober.
MJ Gottlieb, 8 years sober and co-founder of Lucid, an app created to help anyone seeking help for addiction and substance abuse. MJ, great work. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Dr. Roy, Dr. Lee, stick with me. Listeners, we're discussing the treatment options and resources available for substance abuse and addiction during the pandemic. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point. We'll be right back.
A gruesome scandal at the nation's most prestigious university shines a light on a macabre and lucrative world of buying and selling human remains.
Human body parts taken by a manager at the Harvard Medical School morgue and then sold to customers online.
So my first skull is right there on the top shelf. That's my first and my favorite.
I'm reporter Allie Jarmani, and this story raises some tough questions. How should we treat the dead? And who gets to decide?
There should be some middle ground where we treat deceased tissues differently than we treat old refrigerators.
This is Postmortem, The Stolen Bodies of Harvard, a new season of WBUR's Last Scene. Listen and follow Last Scene wherever you get your podcasts.
This is On Point. I'm Jane Clayson. On Monday On Point, we're discussing the historical forces behind George Floyd's killing by the police in Minneapolis. What conversations are you having around these incidents in your household or in your community? We'd love to hear your story. 1-617-353-0683. And we'd love to hear from you. Today, we continue our conversation about substance abuse and addiction during the pandemic and how this period could be an opportunity to improve long-term care for those struggling. With us, Dr. Lippi Roy, clinical assistant professor at the NYU School of Medicine with a specialty in addiction treatment, and Dr. Joseph Lee, medical director for youth services at Hazelden Betty Ford, one of the nation's leading addiction treatment organizations. Let's go to the phones. Chris is in Glencoe, Oklahoma. Hi, Chris. Welcome to On Point.
Hello. I just had a comment. I wanted to point out, I don't feel being an alcoholic in recovery now for 19 years makes me a victim. By using the tools of the program, I think I'm in a lot better shape. And I think that relying on medication and lots of meetings and frequent contact is very helpful, you know, for 6 months, a year, maybe even up to 2 or 3 years of the program. But individuals, sooner or later, all of us addicts and alcoholics, we need to start getting some emotional and spiritual tools to live life on life's terms. And if we don't do that, 2 years after they came out with the first book on 12-step programs, our country went to a war. And we found that, you know, alcoholics did at least as well as any other group in combat. And mm-hmm. they were away from meetings for a long period of time. So if we reach out to people, if we do our own personal step work at home, if we pray and meditate and stay in service, we take life on life's terms, we're going to be just fine.
Chris, thank you so much for the call. Dr. Lee, let me turn Chris's point to you. There's Chris, clean 19 years. You've said people who are early in recovery maybe have a harder time connecting with the care that they need during COVID. Those in recovery longer, like Chris, maybe navigate perhaps a bit easier. Is that right, Dr. Lee?
That's absolutely right. There are people who are new to connecting in that kind of way, in a deep personal way, getting the spirit of volunteerism, community, empathy, and they're just learning the language. And so for them, sometimes a virtual interface is good. It's certainly better than nothing, and it's definitely going to be here to stay. And it's a good thing for consumers and patients, but it can be hard. However, I think the positive point is that people like Chris, beautiful in their recovery, MJ sharing their story. You know, pre-COVID times, I'd give MJ and Chris a fist bump and a hug if they'd let me. Because what you hear over and over again is they're not victims. People who are in recovery for a long time, they're part of the solution. They are willing to give it forward. It's like a big circle. They've experienced suffering and loneliness. They've been steeled by their experiences, and they want to give back and love the community. And that's what you hear over and over again. And I hear that in Chris's testimony and what MJ is doing for the community. And that's what recovery is about. When we say at Hazel and Betty Ford, love, connection, empathy, being humble, passing on the gift of grace to other people. It's not hyperbole. It's something that we really try to live up to.
And that's what so many people were doing in MJ Gottlieb's app, right? Going there and trying to support others, not just going because you need help, but going there to support others. And I'm curious about these apps, about telemedicine, about that during this time of social and physical distancing. Many state medical boards have loosened restrictions on telemedicine during this pandemic. Talk about that. Is this an effective option for addiction recovery? Dr. Roy?
Yes, absolutely. But let me just quickly add to that caller, Chris. First of all, congratulations on his long-term recovery. But just as I don't look at my patients with congestive heart failure and lupus and kidney disease as victims, nor do I look at people with addiction as victims either. They have an illness which they are getting treatment for, and that's how it should be viewed. That's another way to reduce the stigma and to integrate addiction and mental health care into general medical care, primary care. And right now in the era of COVID and quote-unquote isolation, we really need to utilize telemedicine, telepsych services, but that also means making sure that patients, clients have access to iPads and telephones. And then on the provider side, we also need to make sure that insurers, including state Medicaid programs, reimburse clinicians for telehealth and telephonic services the same way they did for in-person visits.
Telehealth, telemedicine, Dr. Lee, effective treatments, especially during a pandemic?
Absolutely. It's a great on-ramp for people. There's so many cultural variables that change. You know how, like, when we learned about the rules of social media and how it influenced people's behaviors, virtual care is here to stay. And that's a win for America because there are a lot of people who don't have transportation, who are in rural areas. I see a lot of young people. I never thought I'd be the old guy who didn't know how to use technology, but these young people are so good at it. And I work in brick and mortar. I see really acute sick patients on a residential side in person with our nurses, psychologists, and other doctors, but I also do virtual care. And there are introverted, shy, anxious people who feel tremendously empowered, actually, by the virtual care experience. Now, I'll say as a clinician, I like to read all the body language and the micro expressions because I'm a child psychiatrist and that's what I do. And so for me, it's a little bit different than the virtual care, but from the patient side, I hear some empowerment that they like a little bit of a barrier in their pajamas and the comfort of their living room. They're much more assertive because we take for granted, also related to shame and stigma, how difficult it is for some people to come to somebody's office and meet with a doctor
That's
or
right.
a clinician. That
That's
can be
right.
very intimidating. Hmm. And those thresholds have been lowered. So there's all these wins along with the tragedy that I think virtual care will help with. And so our Recovery Go platform is privacy law compliant. So we're not doing Zoom or Skype. But a lot of other places could use help in that infrastructure, both for on the reimbursement side, but to get it launched because they're underfunded. A lot of clinics have to rely on Zoom, Skype, and other things because they don't have the infrastructure to build the privacy compliant services people desperately need.
Right. And many treatment centers, Dr. Lee, across this country are at a disadvantage during this period because they're already under-resourced. They're already underfunded and less able to adapt and sort of pivot to this crisis moment, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, they're already under-resourced to start with. They can't find mental health professionals to work there. The talent pool, the resources, they're under fire all the time. And I work in the nonprofit sector, so I understand this very well. And so when something like COVID hits, they're underwater far more than other people. And so you talk about PPE even, for example. You know, people in a treatment setting, hospitals are having a hard time getting PPE. Imagine what treatment centers are going through to try to screen and keep people safe. It's really hard. Mm-hmm.
Back to the phone, Stephanie in Kingsborough, Massachusetts. Hi, Stephanie. Welcome to the program.
Hello. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Go ahead.
So I had called just in response to the last caller, Chris, I believe. And, you know, he had been talking about trying to find that spiritual connection. And, you know, my comment was, especially during this pandemic, being outside for me and trying to connect to something other than me and get out of my own head has been probably the biggest help. And thankfully, it's been nice out. I did end up having a little bit of a relapse during this epidemic. And it's been difficult. But since the nice weather has started, that's been helpful. And, you know, so I think if anyone can connect with their spirituality or whether that is just going outside and connecting with something that is beyond you and bigger than you, I think that's helpful. Mm.
Stephanie, thank you. Good luck to you. Dr. Roy, what do you say to Stephanie?
Well, thank you, Stephanie, for calling and sharing that. A common motto, actually, amongst the harm reduction community is meet people where they're at. So if I meet people like Stephanie or other patients or clients like her, I ask, you know, what do you enjoy? What brings you calm? If it could be going outside, going for a run. It could be going to your favorite pizza place, which may not be an option now, but it's about meeting people where they're at, asking them, what can I do for you? You know, giving back patient autonomy and kind of working as a team. Unfortunately, the field of medicine can be a little hierarchical. You know, I'm the doctor, you're the patient, you need to do what I say. But that type of philosophy just isn't effective. So listening to patients and what they need and helping them get to that point, especially now in this pandemic era when we just need to be more creative and innovative.
Here's a listener from Saddleboro, Vermont, who told us she wants to remain anonymous, but she left us a message describing her struggle with bulimia disorder during the pandemic. Here she is.
Being isolated in quarantine has in many ways been a really terrible experience because the loss of my daily structure of work, of exercise, and of seeing my partner, since I'm isolated without him, has really made it much harder to manage a disorder that I've been able to manage in the past without it taking over my life.
Dr. Lee, another important point about the loss of structure and routine for anyone who's struggling with an addiction or a behavior disorder, Dr. Lee.
That's right. It's exactly what we talked about. And what you find with hypertension is that it often comes along with cholesterol. And so a lot of diseases come together. And believe it or not, addiction and mental health issues come together, sometimes have similar sources. And so a lot of people who struggle with mental health issues or eating issues struggle with addiction and vice versa. And these are the people who fall through the cracks. When their structure, their support seems to fall apart, they have a harder and harder time. And so I want to thank the caller for sharing their story, because what it does for people is there are other people who are alone and trapped in their houses and in their minds wondering, is this struggle mine to bear alone? And it isn't. And even Stephanie, who called in, it was a beautiful and resilient message, because what she's basically saying, and I heard from her, is there's no shame in return to you. So you just get back on track. There's a lot of love and connection for you.
That's right. Back to Beth in Ellicott City, Maryland. Hi, Beth. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hi.
I really have enjoyed the show today. And Dr. Lee, I could really relate to what you said about the secret life. I had one of those. I'm in recovery 14 years from the disease of alcoholism and started a nonprofit here in Ellicott City called SOBAR. It's a play on the words sober and bar. And one of the things that we do in taking non-alcoholic bars to public social events and creating alcohol-free events is to try to break that cycle of shame and stigma. So many times, like when I would be early and not drinking, people would say to me, when I wouldn't take a drink of alcohol, they'd say, "What's wrong with you?" And that's like that's part of what's going on in our society. People are almost shaming you for not drinking. So I really appreciated the show today, and we're trying to find creative ways to do our work during the pandemic, selling Sobar in a box and creating some virtual happy hours, alcohol free.
Beth, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Really important what Beth and others are doing, Dr. Roy, Dr. Lee. You have said both that we should not let this pandemic go to waste, that this is a golden opportunity to actually make some changes. What do you mean by that, Dr. Roy?
You're absolutely right. You know, there's nothing like a pandemic to expose the existing cracks in the U.S. healthcare system. We've already talked about a few of the areas, such as some of the rather archaic laws and policies, which now federal agencies are loosening in terms of restrictions for access to medication. So that's one. Another one is really utilizing telemedicine and virtual care. I love the line that Dr. Lee said, which is virtual care is here to stay, and he's absolutely right. And really using this opportunity to connect in ways that are creative, that are innovative. And for all of the different parties, from policymakers to healthcare providers, to social services, housing, criminal justice, all of us really need to come together to get people the care that they need and deserve. I think that this pandemic is showing that.
Dr. Lee, are there permanent changes to regulations that have been temporarily suspended by the Drug Enforcement Administration that you suggest at this time?
Yeah, I think making it easier for people to access medications, opening up services and greater access so that people can get help, making sure that insurers and other people are accountable to parity, that they really offer the same level of services, that if somebody didn't take care of themselves and had heart disease, they go to a beautiful hospital and they get taken care of really well. But, you know, if you have an addiction and you had genetic loading and you had a lot of adversity and trauma and you go to an ER, sometimes you're given the stink eye, and that's not right. And I think culturally speaking, there's tremendous optimism for change in my heart, because I know there's a lot of tragedy, but we've had a lot of gut punches in America, and I think we've come out better for it. I think we know pre-COVID what the issues are, economic disparities, racism, lack of parity in treatment. We know what the issues are, but I hope the how changes. And I think people in recovery are leading the way because they're willing to give back and showing, again, I keep using the word love, but they keep showing it with love and empathy, how to guide people through this so that we don't take each other for granted, each other's narratives, that we walk individual lives and that we heal together, not just as a recovery community, but as a society. And I hope that's something that we never lose from the COVID pandemic.
And wouldn't it be nice if the medical conversation about the pandemic could broaden out to a mental health discussion and, by extension, addiction in this country, Dr. Roy?
You're absolutely right, Jane. You know, I think the only way to move the needle forward when it comes to both addiction and mental health care is through science and storytelling. Provide the most updated data and research and science, but also have people like MJ, like Stephanie, Chris, all your callers, share their stories of recovery, resilience. Return to use or relapse is expected. That's okay. But we need to share those stories.
Sharing stories is the most important thing to do, the only way. Dr. Yes. Lee, I'll give you the last word here in our last minute. What do you want us to remember about this conversation, about substance abuse, about addiction during this time, during this pandemic, and moving forward?
You know, it's not lost on me that today it's a very tragic time for Minneapolis with the killing of Mr. Floyd and everything that's going on. And that added on top of COVID-19 and people struggling with addiction or mental health issues, my heart goes out to you. I have such love for the recovery community. And my message is basically that we're going to come out better for this. I think because COVID-19 can affect everyone, there's the potential for us to have greater empathy for each other's journey and to really start taking care of each other. And I think there was something that was fractured in our social dialogue prior to COVID, and I hope we fix it. I hope we do things with greater love and empathy for each other.
Beautifully said. Dr. Joseph Lee, Medical Director for Youth Services at Hazelden Betty Ford, thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Lee.
Thank you.
Dr. Lipa Roy, a Clinical Assistant Professor at the NYU School of Medicine with a specialty in addiction treatment. I appreciate so much your words, Dr. Roy. Thank you for being here with us today.
It's been a pleasure, Jane. Thank you.
And listeners, thanks to you for your calls, for your input, for your stories. Thanks for listening. Continue the conversation. Get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Have a good weekend. I'm Jane Clayson. This is On Point.
Support for this podcast comes from Is Business Broken, a podcast from Questrom School of Business. Listen on for a preview of one of the episodes featuring Susan Fournier, Alan Questrom Professor, and Dean.
So let's start this conversation with the title of the show, Is Business Broken? It's a provocative title and a question. Where did this come from? Why that question now?
We're in a big cultural moment where capitalism, business, market systems are really being scrutinized and debated, and the role of business with it. So I think the question is just on the table. It's on people's minds. It's in the news media. It's in conversations. I think there are growing voices, loud voices, especially among young people who seem increasingly to believe that business and maybe capitalism with it are harmful and create rather than solve problems for society. And what we do seem to hear are those loud voices, and they are very black and white. There are protagonists and the antagonists and the pros and the cons, and there's really no middle discussion. It's sort of like people for and against, and it's loud.
Right. For and against DEI, for instance, right? A battle at play.
Right.
The way you describe it and the way you describe the polarization, it makes it feel like very much of the digital age, right? It feels very much of today. Some of those arguments have been around, though, right? Is this criticism of business and this question, is business broken, is that a new question?
You are so right. It is not a new question. Schumpeter, he was a professor at Harvard, and he's also maybe one of the most influential political economists of the early 20th century. He called for the death of capitalism, the death of business, 100 years ago.
Okay. Wow.
And when he critiqued way back then, he said the very successes of capitalism would bring about its downfall because it would create values hostile to capitalism, and that this would particularly take hold among intellectuals who were critiquing. So there's a lot of that same kind of dynamic happening today, and that's 100 years old. But yeah, we've seen this kind of cultural fervor playbook many times in the past, often precipitated by big crises.
Find the full episode by searching for Is Business Broken wherever you listen to podcasts, and learn more about the Mehrotra Institute for Business, Markets, and Society at ibms.bu.edu.